the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, and this morning, Mary Beth Maziarz and I speak with Davey Ratchford. He's the general manager of Snow Basin Resort. He talks about their number one status, how they keep a wonderful culture, and the upcoming 2034 Olympics and Snow Basin's involvement and the events happening there. Then a veterinary epidemiologist who discovered the first new essential fatty acid in nearly 100 years in bottlenose dolphins, and how that nutrient, which is called C15, plays a role in reversing the current trajectory of aging and disease. That's all coming up this hour on The Mountain Life. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Our next guest is General Manager of Snow Basin and the Chief Operating Officer of Grand America Hotels and Resorts, Davey Ratchford. You remember this guy because he used to live in Park City. He joins us now to tell us how, well, Snow Basin got him and how under his leadership, Snow Basin was voted the number one ski resort in North America by USA Today, Outside Magazine, and Ski Magazine. How about that? Davey Ratchford, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, the trifecta in 1 year. I don't know what else I can do now.
Exactly. Which year was that?
That was this last year.
It's incredible. Okay, so as we were talking about before we went on air, we had you over here in Park City until about 2018. You went over, was your first role at Snow Basin as general manager?
Correct. Yeah, I came here as the general manager in 2018 from Park City Mountain. I had 3 years there, and then 2 years in Vail Mountain before that, and a couple of years in Lake Tahoe. And the ski industry life has got a hold of me, and raising my family in the mountains is one of the best decisions I've ever made.
That's great. And I also have to bring this up because we were talking about your previous role, which was in professional soccer, working with Real Salt Lake. And you just told me that skiing, fans of skiing are more passionate possibly than fans of soccer.
Oh, I truly believe that. And I'll explain it this way, is because you see the soccer fans and they're going crazy at the, you know, they're excited, they're chanting, they're banging drums all the time, all over the world, but they stay in the stands. Skiers have that much passion, but they actually do the product. They ski every day, they ski all the time, and they are very, very passionate about what they do. And I think it's just because it's a lifetime sport. They do it from when they're young, they do it to, you know, later in life, and they can be skiing. A lot of people ski for 80 years. And they let me know that.
Well, what's new at Snow Basin? What's been going on that's kind of helped everybody start to discover you?
You know, it was built in 1940 and owned by the Holding family, who also owns Sun Valley. And obviously that's another legacy resort. I think the thing that really sets us apart from most places, I think, is just how easy it is. I always remind it this way. It's kind of like those old commercials, like where you slap the easy button. Like, that was easy. Like, but getting there, you know, all of the parking, the free parking, the large mountain, the amazing lifts, the lodges, the bathrooms, which is hilarious because they really are like the nicest bathrooms out there. And I think we just put in capital into things that make the skiing experience and the snowboarding experience easier for people. And that matters a lot. Time, to me, is the commodity that everybody trades in, no matter what stage of life you're in. And so giving people time for their families or their friends to be up on the mountain skiing, it has set us apart. And it's become very much a hallmark of who we are and part of our brand identity. We have really nice things up here, right? Everybody knows that about Snow Basin, but I think once you just start to deliver on a great, easy experience, high levels of customer service, a big mountain with a lot of history, people start to learn about it. I think the thing that kind of maybe kept us quiet is because we still to this day don't have any hotels here. And so everybody that comes is coming here and then going home or going to their other hotels or going to Park City or, you know, that is a lot of what that experience is. And so now that so many people are flying into Salt Lake and it's oftentimes faster to get to us than anywhere else at 45 minutes, it's the choice. It's become a big choice, and a big choice for people in Park City and a big choice for people in Salt Lake. Another option, I should say.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We were just up in Sun Valley a few weeks ago and loving watching or looking at all the historical pictures on the wall, things like that. How is the legacy of Snow Basin informing its current incarnation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're staying true to who we are, right? The family wanted these resorts to be open to everybody, to have really nice things, to have it feel like a country club, but there's no country club membership, right? It's you walk in, and it's so funny. I heard it this morning. I walked in, new people, and they're like, wow, like this doesn't feel like a ski resort because there's chandeliers and there's big, huge fireplaces and plenty of seating. And I think, you know, we try to just hold on to those core attributes that make us who we are. And it's worked. It's nice for me, like when, and my team knows this, like we're governed by really one kind of principle, which is like, what's the right thing to do? And when you have that, it creates a freedom in choice of how to operate a ski resort. And it's not easy, and it's tough choices at times and challenges. But when we have that guiding principle and the whole staff kind of feels that, it feels like we're paying homage to the past on what we were founded on, but still working in today's world where there's a lot of people wanting to get out to the mountains. There's a lot of people on different past products and trying to, explore. And there's a lot of testing of, do I want to, which mountain to go to? And it is one of the, we have an embarrassment of riches in Utah. I say this all the time, you can't go wrong in any of these mountains. They're amazing. They're Park City, Deer Valley, and I mean, I've skied all of them, I've been around all of them, and they're all really good. And I think what we stand out for is we're really good and we're pretty easy and really nice.
Yeah, that's also a nice trifecta.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with the general manager of Snow Basin, Davey Ratchford, and he's talking about this legacy resort. And Davey, I'm wondering if you can update us. I remember when Earl Holding, the patriarch of, and kind of the visionary of the Holding family, when he passed away, there were some questions surrounding, what does the Holding family want for Snow Basin and Sun Valley? Are they going to sell off to Vail or, can you update us on where you are in terms of, is it going to remain this sort of family owned business?
Yes. And I think that, it's one of those questions. I mean, I think, how you see that is really in the investment that they keep putting back into the experience, the investment in the lift infrastructure to the facilities. The Holdings are a discerning family, and they really care about their properties, Sun Valley and Snow Basin. And they've been able to, put money back into the resort for 30 years. And I remember, before Mrs. Holding, the matriarch who just recently passed away, what she always used to, she was such a lovely woman. I'd bring her around and she'd meet all the guests and she would talk to everybody and they couldn't believe she would just sit down and want to hear what they had to say. And everything was about what we can do better. What can we do more? What could we improve? What could we fix? And that mindset has carried through, right? They want to see this be the very best it can be, but still be discerning in how to approach that. And so I'm lucky to work for the family that has that mindset. And it's not a disparagement against any other ski resort out there because everybody's got their own things they have to work within, right? And you try to make it work the best way you can. I just happen to work for owners that own two incredible ski resorts and really invest in it and want to hold on to those properties and make it the best possible experience they can. And I'm the beneficiary of that, running one of the resorts. I'm very, very lucky.
You are very lucky. And it's really a gift to be able to say, what is the right thing here to do? And then also have the resources to back that up. So it's like you're a mom and pop ski resort at the same time you're the most amazing, beautiful ski resort. It's
really, yeah.
Okay, you in late 2024, we got another promotion. And it's, you'll have to explain what it is. Chief Operating Officer of Grand America Hotels and Resorts. I mean, what is this? You're a ski guy.
I'm a ski guy. I'm still a ski guy. So my focus is at Snow Basin. The title is just a global title within our company. There's two chief operating officers, myself and the Pete Sontag, who runs Sun Valley. So the overarching company is owned by the Grand America, the Little America, the hotels that you know down in Salt Lake and around the West. But the focus is at Snow Basin. So it's a fancy title, the chief operating officer title, but I'm still dedicated solely to Snow Basin. I'm here every day. It's what I focus on. So yes, I have hotel experience. I've done that, but they do such a good job down there. If you've never been to the Grand America, I think you know what I'm talking about. Or if you have been, you know what I'm talking about. They don't need any ski guy who wears this, you know, the puffy jackets and the ski pants all day coming in and trying to tell them what to do. I'm focused solely on making this the resort the best it can be.
I think our good friend Regis works down as the food and bev guy down at Grand America, if you know him from up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is legendary. And he wears his black vest with his white shirt every day. And he is as French as they come in all the right ways, right? He knows food and beverage. He knows how to be precise. He is exacting in what he does. And the company is very fortunate to have him on the team.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're fortunate to have you, too. I think that another time we should have you on just to talk about time management, because you must be doing something really well.
Oh.
Let me ask you this. So you mentioned how you're working hard to make things easier for visitors and schlepping the skis. So many accoutrements is just a part of the ski experience. How else is customer service evolving these days over at Snow Basin?
You know, I would look at it this way. When you can run a resort where you have high levels of engagement with the staff, so they're engaged in what they do every day, because these are not easy jobs, right? Anytime you work in the ski industry, you're taking on, it's a beloved thing. You're taking on a lot. It's cold. The conditions can be tough. They're long hours. You work weekends and holidays. So having an engaged staff, having incredible resources, and, you know, that we've been gifted here with the resort, and then having the public see it and rank us high, right? And give us those, and you know, those encouraging awards or recognition. It really helps us, I would say. Those are the things that really make the difference in how you start to show up, because service then becomes that kind of underpinning thing. Everybody has, and again, I said this, Utah is so lucky with the mountains that we have and the people running these mountains. There's some great, great operators out there. At the end of the day, they're mountains, and it's the people that bring life to mountains. And so when you have an engaged workforce and you know them and you're out there doing it with them, it creates a high level of service. And I think for me, I mean, my team knows I'm out there bussing tables with them, and it works out really well, because three of my four kids have worked at Snow Basin. One still does, and my youngest is about to start working. She just turns and she wants to work, and I work with them. So it's fun for me. Like, I'm out there bussing tables, or I pour soup, or you bump chairs, or whatever it is that you do, you take out garbages. And when we all do that, when it's really hard to find out, like, see who the leader is up here, because they're all leaders, service kind of comes easy that way, because the engaged staff makes it fun. I recognized two young men last week, 17 and 16. They both work in parking. And they're recognized because the energy these guys have blows me away. They're out there moving, dancing and moving people through, get parking spots. And I just asked them when we recognized them, like, how do you do? And they're like, we just love what we do. We love. And I'm like, you're in a blizzard. Here it's freezing and you're waving people in, and it's infectious when you have a good team like that. And I think the culture has been, you know, hard at work for a long time, from the top down and the bottom up, and meeting in the middle somewhere. And we all strive to do the best thing we can. It's, as I said, not easy. And sometimes, you know, you got to pull passes because somebody was naughty on something. And sometimes the food didn't make it out in time, or sometimes there's not a chair on a busy weekend. There's always something, right, that you deal with. But we own it top to bottom, and we make the best of it each time. And to me, it's created a workforce and a team that is second to none. I love the people I work with.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible culture. Why should people up here in Park City where we've got some lovely mountains, why should they make the trek over to Snow Basin?
Well, one, they already do. Their friends seem to they seem to be here a lot. And I think it's mostly like variety, right? Like, cause I said, you know, Deidre and Todd, the folks that run those mountains, I know them well, they're friends and they're good, good people. And they care a lot about the experience. And I have nothing but regard for the people that put in the work like that, like they do. And it's nothing, you'll never hear me say anything negative about it. I think really what it is people have choice and they have time and they have means. And you know, the passes that are out there allow people to go sample, right? And go try something else. And I think there's we've seen an evolution over the last, well, say 15 years of, you know, what product gets you to what mountain. And it's different because some years you'll want to, because you've got a busy year, you're going to only want to ski a handful of times. And then you're in town and you're going to ski the full year. Sometimes you have a recovery. Sometimes you use your friend's buddy passes to go try something new. How you get to a mountain is varied and different, and that has evolved greatly over. I mean, there's 15 different ways to try come ski a ski resort now, and so that sampling nature that Utah has an abundance of already because it's so close to each other. I think now people are looking and going, well, I've skied that a few days, and I heard, you know, Snow Basin's pretty neat. I heard their bathrooms are incredible. I should go check it out. And, have a, you know, chicken and waffles at the top of JP Lodge and see, you know, where the Olympic runs were. And I think they, you know, that matters to people now. And I think, we're seeing a lot of Park City and Deer Valley people come over. It's fun seeing the ski instructors in Deer Valley outfits here, because we know them, right? And we always check in on them. They're people just want to try something different and what this story is all about. And, you know, that Olympic legacy is a big piece of it, right? Where people want to come and see what that's about. And so, again, you'll never hear me say anything negative about it. I just think it's and there's something new to try and something new to experience. And it's very close, right? As you know, like from Park City to us, it does not take long at all.
Right. Well, it's funny. I wouldn't normally be selling someone on going somewhere because of the drive, but really that's how, what I say to people, especially if they're visitors to Park City, go to Snow Basin. It's such a lovely drive to get there. When you drive into the Morgan Valley, it's just incredible.
Beautiful.
So, you know, because we do have so many choices and so many great resorts. So why not go for the really peaceful drive?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, I believe that at some point the Holding family was involved with Wasatch Peaks Ranch. Is that correct?
We had some of the land that they built on that we owned that we worked with them on so they could get their ski resort built. And that was, I don't know too much about it. It was before my time.
Okay.
Wasatch Peak now is active and it's around the corner. We work with them quite a bit. Really, really amazing place. Again, great people. At both their guests and the employees that work there. Some of my employees have gone and worked there, and some of their employees have come and worked here. And yeah, so the Holdings have, I think, had an initial connection to it from the land perspective that they sold or helped them get so that they could get the ski resort built, the private ski resort built.
You know, when you said there's no lodging there at Snow Basin, and it makes me think about the whole area. You know, people do love to go there and ski. And I was wondering if you could comment on the availability of lodging. Now we have, and I'm trying to think about all of the resorts over there between Snow Basin, Powder Mountain, Nordic Valley, and Wasatch Peaks, which is private. What happens? How do you accommodate guests to the area?
So there is actually quite a bit of lodging around us. And I think sometimes people forget I think it's the second biggest city in Utah, Ogden, is 20 minutes away. And so we have a lot of people. And Ogden's in this fantastic resurgence in and of itself. And I think, you know, I will take the resort, I think, you know, helps take some credit in bringing a lot of people to try out Snow Basin. And then, you know, Ogden's around the corner. There is a lot of lodging nearby and around us. We just currently don't have any at the resort itself. But there is quite a bit of choice for people to get around and to try new things and to try new experiences around the resort. The Compass Rose is a small little boutique place in the valley in Huntsville that has an observatory where you can see the stars. It's one of the Dark Skies Initiative. There's really unique places like that that exist in and around. But yeah, you're not going to see the big Four Seasons, and you're not going to see the Ritz-Carltons out there, nearby yet. But who knows, what the future holds. But right now, we're able to accommodate those that want to in and around the area. And I do see a big, I see a lot of growth, a lot of people moving into this area, right? And I think it's a great, beautiful place. It's still quite untouched, really, from the ski community perspective. But yeah, there's a lot of choice for people to come stay in different places.
What's your favorite run?
So I'm a big believer in mental health. And I think there's a huge, to me, being in the outdoors generally. I say this to as many people that will hear my voice, both employees or staff or family, is if you can be in the mountains and you have an option is to go out there and do it, you should. And to me, early morning, there's an area, a third of our mountain is an area called Strawberry. And there's some areas there early morning, the sun's coming up, it's coming down, the snow is just getting a little soft in the morning. And I have had moments out there. I don't know what you would call them, and I had to define it. But connecting moments for sure with the mountain and with the people. And Main Street out there, we call it Main Street, just the main way down is wide, and it's this fantastic undulation to like just long carvers. I had some similar runs like that when I was at Park City, and I've had them at Vail. I've had them at all the different places I've been. But here, they're pretty remarkable. And then I'd be remiss if you don't talk about the Olympic runs, because for so many people, there's not a lot of them in operation that you can just go ski every day still and ski what people did. And I think it was, what, 98 seconds top of the mind. I don't do it, and I don't want anyone to do it in 98 seconds unless the course is closed. But these are remarkable mountains. With incredible vantage points and beauty, and I absolutely have had kind of some life-changing moments on the in these mountains.
Oh, that's wonderful. And then what's going to happen at Snow Basin for the upcoming Olympics?
Yeah, a lot. So we signed the, I've been working on this for almost 5 years behind the scenes, and getting the venue use agreement, then getting announced was like the end of a long chapter one. Of getting everything done to say yes to it and make sure that we were ready, and trying to project your business 10 years out is pretty hard to do, and look at where we might be and what impacts an event of that magnitude would have. But what we said yes to the downhills again, obviously, because we're really the only place to do that, and their legacy runs. And when we had, the Olympic Committee out, they were like, okay, yeah, we understand, we get it. And they're still in use today. But we said yes to other events too. So slalom, giant slalom. So the technical events will also be at Snow Basin. And that will be a new run called BEX. Actually, the designers will be out at the end of this month skiing around and looking at that area for the new runs that we'll be bringing in. But I mean, what a chance for us to, for a resort to have three dedicated Olympic runs is quite extraordinary. And this mountain can do it and can hold it and do it right. And it's a great legacy for us. And so we're excited. I had hair prior to this and very quickly went bald, apparently. No, it's exciting. It's a lot of unknowns, right? Like it's a lot of how does this work and how does it all come together? But it will come together, and we have the best people. I'll tell you a quick side story if I can. It might be fun for you, but we have a groomer here. I'll be honest with you, I don't know his real name. He goes by Swampy. And Swampy is a groomer. He's been doing it a long time. In fact, Swampy may be his name. I don't know his actual, he just goes by Swampy. And the Olympic meetings were happening, and I get a call from Swampy, and he's like, hey, just so you know, so-and-so, this very big wig is going to be here next week from the Olympics, and I thought you should know. And I'm like, Swampy, like, did they reach out to you to set that up? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, just so you know, I'm kind of a big deal in the Olympics. And then I was like, oh, and he's fun. He's a character like that. Turns out Swampy is a very big deal in the Olympics. And he was there for 2002. He ran the show. He's grooming for us now. And the whole time he's just so quiet about it and humble about it. And he's like, Davey, just so you know, you're kind of the rookie, the afterthought on this. Like, they're going to come to me on this stuff. And that's me. And it was hilarious. And I was like, okay, we got a really, really good team. And Swampy made sure to let me know that he's the man and knows all the inner workings of how this stuff happened in 2002 and will guide me and help me through 2034. So, you know, it's one of those things. We have amazing people and incredible legacies.
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful team and a wonderful place to work. It's a legacy resort, and I think you're on your way to becoming a legacy general manager. Davey Ratchford is our guest. He's also the COO of Grand America Hotels and Resorts, which he swears is just a title.
It really is just a title. I'm at Snow Basin every day.
We're so excited that you took this time to talk with us. And, you know, we'll have a lot of time. Although it will seem like it's here tomorrow, 2034, the Olympics. But we'd love to hear some updates from you. We know you're going to be there.
Oh, I'm not going anywhere. And I would love to do that. Because I think here's what I'll say, the human element of the Olympics, how great would it be? You know, because we have these games coming up. And we have Peekaboo Street and people that have like been around a long time that know Snow Basin and Lindsey Vonn and all these incredible people. But if we can have, like, there's 10-year-olds right now or 12-year-olds right now who very well, in Utah, could very well be competing in our mountains in 2034. And those stories and those connecting points and those legacies, you know, we have big mountains and we have amazing venues and, you know, it will look really good on TV. But the people, the young men and women right now, or boys and girls even, who will be competing, and I think we have a very good shot of competing and representing Team USA at any of these events. Those are stories I'm very excited about because they're emerging and we don't even know them yet, right? Like, yeah, they're still to be written, but we know they will exist, and that part's super exciting for us to be talking about over the next 9 years.
Davey Ratchford, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
For the last 50 years, nutritional guidance has told us to restrict or eliminate saturated fats from our diets for optimal health. And yet, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and fatty liver disease continue to grow at alarming rates. Well, the research of our guest today, Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson, suggests that the answer may lie not in a new approach to the way we eat fats, but an old one. In her new book, The Longevity Nutrient, The Unexpected Fat That Holds the Key to Healthy Aging, Dr. Venn Watson shares how her work as a veterinary epidemiologist led to the discovery of the first new essential fatty acid in nearly 100 years, and how this nutrient, which is called C15, might just be the saturated fat that reverses the current trajectory of aging and disease. Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Lynn and Mary Beth, it's wonderful to be here.
Well, we're really excited to talk to you. And the most fascinating part is how you stumbled upon this. You are a veterinary epidemiologist. You were working with bottlenose dolphins and looking at what made the healthiest of them be so healthy. Tell us the story.
Right. Who knew? This was a wonderful accident, the whole story. So, yeah, exactly. As a veterinary epidemiologist, like Lynn, like you shared, I was recruited by the Navy about 20 years ago to help continually improve the health and welfare of dolphins. A lot of people aren't aware that the Navy has cared for, you know, the sustained population of bottlenose dolphins for over 60 years. They live in the open ocean in San Diego Bay, go out into the open ocean every day. Every day they choose to come back. So yeah, as a veterinarian, to be honest, I wasn't sure how I'd feel about dolphins in the Navy, but it did not take long before seeing the quality of life that these dolphins had, that it really is a wonderful place, which, you know, gets us to the discovery where I was looking, caring for older, understanding aging in bottlenose dolphins. And that's because at the Navy, the dolphins live a whole lot longer than they do in the wild. In the wild, they live to 20. At the Navy, they're now living into the 50s. So we had this Navy, had this population of geriatric dolphins. And over a period of 10 years, we really were able to document that some dolphins, but not all, were getting these aging-associated diseases that sound mighty familiar, right? Like high cholesterol, chronic inflammation, arthritis, fatty liver disease, even the full suite of changes consistent with Alzheimer's. So all of a sudden, we were sitting on this amazing patient population that were developing some of the similar diseases of aging as we were. And it opened up a great opportunity to help Navy dolphins, which then turned around to helping us.
Wow, just incredible. Okay, so I mentioned in the intro, this essential fatty acid is called C15, but that's just an easy way of saying pentadecanoic acid.
Much easier, right? We'll stick with C15.
Yeah. So C15 was the first new essential fatty acid discovered in nearly 100 years. What was the one before that? Was it the omega-3?
That's right. So back in 1929 to 1931, it was a couple actually named Dr. George Burr and Mildred Burr. And Dr. George Burr had just discovered vitamin E. And he was doing some studies, a series of studies, and they, as a course of these studies, then discovered the two essential fatty acids that had been known up until now. One, Lynn, exactly as you said, one was an omega-3 and one was an omega-6. So the first two essential fatty acids discovered back to back by Dr. Burr and Mildred. And, it took 90 plus years for us understanding dolphin, long-lived mammal health to find the third, C15.
Why do you think there's been so little continued exploration of fatty acids? It seems like they're important.
Yeah, Mary Beth, that's a great point. There's, you know, when we first made this discovery, you know, what we had done is we were able to compare healthy aging versus non-healthy aging dolphins. We used this advanced technology called metabolomics, in which we were able to look at thousands of small molecules present in the dolphin's archived blood and also their all fish diet to see which small molecules predicted the healthiest aging dolphins. It was because we had this, you know, really amazing, clean population of long-lived large brain dolphins, right? They don't smoke, they don't drink, they have the same social, well, they're already Navy dolphins, so, but they don't have the same socioeconomic status. So there was all of this control, and all they eat are fish. So it allowed us this amazingly clean cheat sheet that, you know, it took a half a century for the Navy to accumulate these samples and data to allow, you know, a humble veterinary epidemiologist who doesn't even know how to swim, right, to come into the story and be able to apply an advanced technology that was available mainly for drug discovery and development. We then transitioned it to look for nutrients that had, you know, active benefits. And that's where, doing the study, we found that C15 was the top predictor of the healthy aging dolphins. And then that kickstarted a 10-year Office of Naval Research funded studies to understand and get to C15 as being this first essential fatty acid to be found in 90 years. So why haven't we found others? You know, I think this is the beginning, Mary Beth. I think we're going to see a lot more exciting discoveries with regard to fatty acids. And it's because we now have access to these wonderful technologies that can rapidly look for new essential nutrients in a way that, you know, George and Mildred Burr couldn't do back in the 1920s and 30s. So it's a very exciting time.
Wow. It is fascinating, isn't it? And how lucky we are to have that data from the last 50 years to look at. Are dolphins, like we hear about rats and mice being used in research, but are dolphin systems very similar to human systems? Is this an apples to apples situation?
It ends up being maybe like a Granny Smith apple to a but yes, apple family. It is, you bring up a great point, which is, you know, a lot of studies with regard to, you know, longevity and long-term health and on chronic diseases are done on short-lived species. And so because these short-lived species don't really, like mice, don't really naturally develop these conditions, they're induced, you know, in a kind of an unnatural way, and then, you know, done, worked up in a lab, and then a molecule is tested to see if it can benefit it. In this case, this was just a population that we surprisingly discovered that dolphins and humans have remarkable parallels, not only in developing these chronic diseases naturally over decades, but there have been other groups that have gone in and, like, for example, looked at the genetics of dolphins, and they found, you know, we talk about our chromosome, 23 chromosomes, right? And there's human chromosome 1, and there are only 3 other groups of animals that have the exact same human chromosome 1 as us, which is, of course, we have because it's human, and that's bottlenose dolphins, the two-toed sloth, and primates. So, I mean, so it's just like, it's, so there's this really interesting co-evolution of aging that dolphins and humans have parallel tracked. And we have evolved to basically survive and live a long time in similar ways, despite the fact that cetaceans are, you know, closely related to their artiodactyls. So they're closely related to, like, cattle and camels. But those big brains and long lives created this really fascinating, you know, parallel between the two.
Wow. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with veterinary epidemiologist, Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson. She's written a new book that is all hinging on this discovery of this essential fatty acid called C15. The book is called The Longevity Nutrient. Okay, Stephanie, one of the chapters in your book discusses the rise and fall of the omega-3s. Now, people might really be disappointed by this. We love our omega-3 fish oil supplements. So what's going on here?
Yeah, it's a complicated story. So there's no, you know, clear definitive moment in the book, but the book does bring up some key points. And it also started from the dolphin studies because, you know, that all dolphins eat our fish. And our hypothesis at the time was that the healthy aging dolphins were aging healthier because of omega-3s. We thought this was going to be obvious and that the studies would show that dolphins with higher omega-3s aged healthier. And in fact, it didn't show that at all. So omega-3s didn't even make the list of the top 30 molecules, which was very surprising. When we look now at humans, I think some key points to bring across, which, you know, bring up in the book is, first, yes, omega-3 and an omega-6, like I mentioned, are two essential fatty acids. So that means that we do need them in our bodies to maintain our health. The best way that we can get these omega-3 and omega-3s is through our diet. And so, including, like, I get them through fish. I eat fish almost every day. So they're good natural sources of omega-3s. The cracks in the omega-3 supplement world has been fish oil. And as you can imagine, you know, fish oil, it's oil. Omega-3 fatty acids have the structure that includes having double bonds in their structure. And every double bond in an omega-3 fatty acid structure is susceptible to attack by oxygen, which is why when you leave fish oil out or oil out in general, and it's exposed to air, right, it goes rancid. So that is rancidity. So the problem with omega-3 fish oil supplements is that as soon as those molecules hit the world and are processed and, you know, outside of the fish, it's exposed to oxygen. And that's why half of omega-3 supplements have levels of this lipid peroxidation, or I won't go as far as rancidity, but this first steps toward rancidity, half, over half reliably have these early signs of being attacked by oxygen. So it some studies, omega-3 studies, fish oil supplements are positive, some are negative, some are null, you know, some are null. And so it's kind of this big mess, mainly because of the quality of the supplements, not because it's the manufacturer's fault, it's just the susceptibility of it. So the book goes into detail about where NIH, where the American Heart Association is on omega-3 supplements, and really concluding that in general, for people who are healthy, that omega-3 supplements don't have huge benefits. It can help with arthritis. At high doses, it could lower triglycerides, but otherwise, not helpful. But for people who do have heart disease and are working with their doctor, there may be some indication of benefit. So as I said, it's not black and white, but we're understanding more and more. It's not the fix-all we thought it was, because, you know, it's fish oil.
Yeah. Okay. That's so interesting, because I've always thought it's the one fish oil salesperson who's trying to discredit the other fish oil salesperson by saying, their fish oil is rancid. Ours is the only truly good one. So back to C15 then. And we always should look at how we're getting these kinds of things from our food. Can we get this quote unquote new essential fatty acid from our food ever? Or do we always need to have it in a supplement? And if so, are they on the market?
We can't get them from our diet. We can reliably get C15 from dairy fat. Dairy fat, by far, as humans, is our primary source of C15. And it's such an important source of C15 for us that, you know, since 1977, we started taking dairy fat out of our diets, right? As you mentioned, as we started taking whole fat cow's milk out of our diet, C15 levels have declined population wide, and has led to what we published late last year of a new nutritional deficiency syndrome called cellular fragility syndrome, the first nutritional deficiency syndrome discovered in 75 years, like vitamin C deficiency and scurvy and vitamin D deficiency and rickets. So food is a way to help, especially in our kids and our children, to get C15 back into our world. What we have to be careful about is that, you know, no, all mammals drink milk at birth, right? So it's like nature's perfect food for us to have as we're young and we're developing. No other mammals drink, eat dairy after that development period. So we're kind of the only ones. So what we're finding is that dairy, just like the omega-3 supplement world, the dairy fat world is also super messy science. And it's because dairy fat has over 400 fatty acids in them. 40% are pro-inflammatory, only 1% is C15. So that's why, you know, if we could have solved this problem at the Navy by just saying drink more whole fat milk, we would have just done that. So, and we also were not going to take butter and put it in a capsule and say, take that. You know, the goal of the Navy and 10 years of research was to say, can we find a way to get this molecule pure, isolate it from the competitive pro-inflammatory fats, and then enable it to go to work so we could do better than we did before through food. So that's kind of the trajectory of the evolution of going from what we're really encouraging are for the youth, let's try to get whole dairy fat back into diets, get them through a whole food as all mammals do. And then as we get older in age, be able to introduce the supplement as a helpful way to be able to keep that, you know, the health benefits of C15 going.
I have a friend who had a traumatic brain injury a couple of years ago, and her doctor said for her brain recovery to eat butter. Grass-fed butter was a real neurological aid, and I'd never heard that before. And so maybe people are catching up in certain ways, or they're the different fields are coming together in a way that will hopefully help us find it without getting those 40% of non-helpful fats. Can we be tested right now for a C15 deficiency?
There are tests. And so if most doctors, or all doctors, have access to fatty acid panels. And so because this is a fatty acid, It wasn't until really the mid-1990s that C-15 started to be included in these panels. A big question I get is, why wasn't C-15's been known since the 1950s? Why didn't anyone make this discovery earlier? And a lot of this, Mary Beth, is because C-15 was actually used as the ruler in fatty acid panels to help measure all the other fatty acids. So all these big studies that were done, poor C-15 got left out, never got included in the studies. So now that there are over 100 peer-reviewed papers on C-15's benefits, in part because fatty acid panels started including C-15 as something that you could actually look at and study. So you can ask your doctor for a fatty acid panel, just make sure they check and make sure that C-15 is included in that. And we also partnered with Genova Diagnostics to do an at-home blood spot test. So I did that. I used that test to be able to measure my C-15, which was fun.
And how is yours?
It's great. So the average person today has about 0.2% of C-15 in their blood and cell membranes. That is right on the precipice of cellular fragility syndrome. So even though this is where most people are, it doesn't mean that's healthy. It means that we are all lower than we should be on average. People in Sardinia who live a long time and they have a lower risk of heart disease, which is why they live longer, they have C-15 levels of 2 to 3 times higher, 0.4 to 0.6. So I am very proud to say I have a 0.42% rate. And it's a combination. I don't shy away from cheeses that grass-fed dairy fat, Mary Beth, like you mentioned. Cows that eat grass have twice as much C-15 in their fat, in their dairy fat, than cows that eat corn. I grass-fed dairy products and our supplement fatty 15 got me to the longevity levels of C-15.
Wow, I just feel like over and over again we are being told to return to the wisdom of our grandparents and our great grandparents who had gardens. They milk their cows, and the modern lifestyle doesn't always support that. But it is interesting to take yourself back in time and ask, would my grandparent or my great grandparent recognize this food? Would they be able to eat it? I realize we've been talking about it, but what kind of benefits will people see on their various body systems if their C-15 levels are optimal?
Yeah, so a lot what we cover in the longevity nutrient, right? There's a lot of science behind what C-15 does. And we're now understanding that as an essential fatty acid, C-15 is what's called a pleiotropic molecule, which means it does a lot of things. And so nature is really good at that. If it is essential, it gives it lots of jobs. One of its primary jobs is to stabilize our cell membrane. So as a stable fatty acid with no double bonds, right? It doesn't get attacked by oxygen. So it keeps our cell membranes strong and resilient against breakdown. That's one of its primary roles that enables longevity. There's this theory called the cell membrane pacemaker theory of aging that came out from A.J. Holberg. And he showed that the more stable the fatty acids in your cell membrane, the longer a species' lifespan was. So this is truly an evolutionary, old school way to help ensure longevity. In addition, C-15 has anti-inflammatory properties. It targets the longevity pathway, the fancy words, activates AMPK and inhibits mTOR, but it's been shown to have anti-inflammatory, helping with glucose and insulin control, improving liver health. And so people experience, and we've shown, or other studies have shown in clinical trials, that within 12 weeks, so within 3 to 6 months, improvements in liver health, glucose health, and cholesterol health as well. We had the delight and surprise that within 2 weeks, half of our customers felt better. And it was very consistently deeper sleep, calmer mood, less joint pain, and a calmer mood. So it was really interesting. So we thought, well, what's going on? This is probably a placebo effect, because that's not what we understood C-15 to do. And the dolphins couldn't tell us they were sleeping better. But what we secondarily discovered is that our bodies take C-15 to make a second molecule called pentadecanoyl carnitine, or PDC. It's the second ever discovered full-acting endocannabinoid. That was a mouthful, but the take-home point is our bodies use C15 not only for all of those benefits I talked about, but to make a molecule that targets these receptors that we called cannabinoid receptors because of cannabis, but we weren't naturally meant to have cannabis. Those receptors were there. It ends up were all there throughout our mind and body, or sorry, are in order to be activated by this metabolite to help us sleep better and, you know, have less drink. And so I just felt it too. So anyway, that lots of benefits. And again, it just gets back to, it's an essential nutrient that we need in our bodies.
So interesting. Okay. We have just a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, it's no secret that among other first world countries, developed countries, we are about the least healthy. We're the most obese. We have the highest rate of diabetes, fatty liver disease, all of these things. Is there something about a processed food diet that depletes your level of C15?
That is a great question. I think a lot of the processed foods, so we're found, like, for example, if you compare raw milk versus pasteurized milk, there's no difference in C15. But when you talk about processed foods, a lot of processed foods brag that they have lower, like they're trying to remove saturated fats and it has, right. And then so it ends up being, I think what happens is it means this trade-off of not having as much C15. I think what we're just seeing more is, you know, the avoidance from birth. We're seeing science supporting that from the womb, we're having a generation born since the 1990s that have been born into a world that is C15 deficient. And that is driving accelerated aging, even a whole new form of cell death, which is a whole nother discussion, but called ferroptosis. And now we're coming to understand that C15 nutritional deficiencies cause this new form of cell death that is accelerating aging in younger people. That's, again, leading to this onset and growth in type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease, everything that we're seeing here in the US and globally.
If we are curious about what our own C15 levels are, what is the name of that little test that you did, the blood test?
Absolutely. So it's the blood spot test is from Genova Diagnostics. And if you'd like, I'm happy to provide the link to their test.
Please do. Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson, she is the author of the book, The Longevity Nutrient, The Unexpected Fat That Holds the Key to Healthy Aging. Stephanie, it's been so interesting talking with you today. Thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Lynn, Mary Beth, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. You can find this episode on kpcw.org under the Shows tab, or on the KPCW app, or wherever you get your podcasts at KPCW The Mountain Life. And if you like today's episode, rate us, subscribe to the show, and share it with your friends.